Hi, welcome to The Halfling. I'm your host, Jaren Pack, and this is episode 24. I, Narvi, made them. Hi, guys. I know, it's been a while again. I'm sorry for the inconsistent episode releases lately. I promise I've been busy with good stuff behind the scenes, much of which I'll be providing updates on as the show gets a little bit closer. In the meantime, I'm excited to be back. Not just because I love nerding out on Middle-earth, but also because this next topic is a really, really good one. To set the stage, let me just say that our next series after this is going to be on the elven craftsman Celebrimbor, who is one of the key figures of the Second Age. He's the one who helps create the Rings of Power. He's both duped by and a key resistor of Sauron. He's basically a really big deal. For every Celebrimbor-level character out there, though, there are a ton of others who are living in the shadows of the great personalities, even if they're just as worthy of some attention. With that in mind, this time we're focusing on shining a light on a Celebrimbor-adjacent character who deserves a lot of love, even if it only comes via a humble podcast episode like this. So, while Celebrimbor will get his time in the spotlight of our show, first, we're going to take a detour to discuss one of his best friends who never gets his just due in Tolkien's writings, and, at least as of the time of this episode being published, he doesn't even get a scrap of a mention in any adaptations that I'm aware of. I'm talking about Narvi. And if you're picturing a tall, slender, elven hero who functions as Celebrimbor's second-in-command or something, well, you're wrong. Narvi is a dwarf. That's right, a dwarf. Let's break this down. Now, just a quick little disclaimer here before we get things going. While I promise you this guy's worth investigating, Narvi is one of those characters with next to no information in the source material itself. So, along with the scraps of data we do have on the character, we're going to spend a lot of time in the next two episodes discussing dwarvish culture and their relations with the elves in the context of Narvi's life and his achievements. Make sense? Good. Now, when the Fellowship of the Ring first starts their quest, they set out from Rivendell and travel south. They head along the west side of the Misty Mountains, which they eventually try to cross, first by going over them and then under them by the Mines of Moria. That name Moria means the Black Pit or the Black Chasm. And it makes sense, right? I mean, the place is dark, dreary, scary, it's filled with orcs and worse things. But it wasn't always that way. Earlier in its history, the place is called Khazad-dûm, which is the name the dwarves give it in their own secret language. Now, in most cases, we can't give you the translation of the actual dwarvish because it's a secret language. But in this case, Tolkien gives us this little tidbit in Appendix F of The Return of the King. Quote, "But the dwarves themselves, and this name at least was never kept secret, called it Khazad-dûm, the mansion of the Khazad, for such is their own name in their own race, and has been so since Aule gave it to them at the beginning in the deeps of time." End quote. Just for the record, Aule is one of the Valar, the spiritual guardians of Middle-earth. He's a smith, and the one who creates the dwarves, at least partway. Technically, the creator, Ilúvatar, is the one who ultimately gives the fathers of the dwarves individual sentient life, but Aule is the one who originally conceives the idea of them in the first place, and he's always seen as the father figure of the dwarven race. Anyway, back to Moria. The dwarves call the place Khazad-dûm, and it's an epic Middle-earth location for a really long time. In fact, it's one of the biggest dwarven hotspots on the entire map, and it only becomes more important as the First Age and Second Ages play out. In the Silmarillion, it explains that while there are several dwarven mansions of note, quote, "Greatest of all the mansions of the dwarves was Khazad-dûm, the Dwarodelf, Hathodrond in the Elvish tongue, that was afterwards in the days of its darkness called Moria." While Moria is a big deal in The Lord of the Rings, and it's like right there smack dab in the middle of the map, originally, it was far to the east of where the action was taking place. This less important initial location leads to this chunk of text that follows the quote we just read, where it explains that Khazad-dûm, quote, "was far off in the mountains of mist, beyond the wide leagues of Eriador, and to the Eldar came but as a name and a rumor from the words of the dwarves of the Blue Mountains." End quote. Okay, I know that's a lot of names and information to start out with, so let's summarize. In essence, what this is saying is that the dwarves that lived further west on the map in the First Age were the main ones who initially interacted with elves. But Khazad-dûm was just a rumored fortress away in the east. Was it incredible? You betcha. At least according to the rumors, but it wasn't really in the spotlight. Then, at the end of the First Age, the entire western continent of Middle-earth is sunk in this catastrophic war that destroys Morgoth's, that's the original Dark Lord's, power, which we've talked about a few times now, in different episodes. That's the whole War of Wrath event that creates the Middle-earth map that we're used to seeing. The dwarves in the sinking area of land, at least those that survive, hightail it out of there and head east. Many of them make for Khazad-dûm, in fact. This leads to a large concentration of different kinds of dwarves, an intra-dwarven melting pot, so to speak, and they're all hailing from different houses with different skills and experiences. All of them are colliding in one place at the same time at the beginning of the Second Age. The overlapping and increasing population leads to an explosion of growth and guides Khazad-dûm into its greatest era, which takes place during that Second Age, and it lasts for thousands and thousands of years. Even in the later part of the Second Age, when Sauron already has the One Ring and he's laying waste to most of the continent, Khazad-dûm remains an unconquered stronghold that the Dark Lord can't crack. For reference, all of this is a long time before a Balrog shows up and spoils all the fun. In fact, throughout the entire Second Age and well into the Third Age, the Dwarven Mansion remains powerful and glorious. It's only 2,000 years into the Third Age that the Balrog is actually unleashed. That's the whole delved too greedily and too deep bit, which makes a lot more sense when you think of them as having lived in that house for thousands of years and, you know, they've gotten kind of bored and they're trying to find greener pastures or darker mines or whatever you want to call it. Anyway, the Balrog doesn't show up until roughly 1,000 years before the Fellowship shows up in the same place. So we're talking, even just from the beginning of the Second Age, over 5,000 years, and then just 1,000 years with the Balrog on site. So the glorious version of Khazad-dûm is much more indicative of what that place looked like than the black pit that we're used to from the Lord of the Rings. So all of this migration and prosperity is summed up in Appendix A of The Return of the King, where it succinctly states that, quote, "After the end of the First Age, the power and wealth of Khazad-dûm was much increased, for it was enriched by many people and much lore and craft, when the ancient cities of Nogrod and Belagost in the Blue Mountains were ruined at the breaking of Thangorodrim. The power of Moria endured throughout the Dark Years and the dominion of Sauron, for though Eregion was destroyed and the gates of Moria were shut, the halls of Khazad-dûm were too deep and strong and filled with a people too numerous and valiant for Sauron to conquer from without. Thus its wealth remained long unravished, though its people began to dwindle." Okay, I know this is a lot of background, and I kind of just want to keep on diving deeper and deeper into dwarven history, to be honest. The dwarves are just so fascinating. They're an amazing part of Middle-earth, and their history is mesmerizing. But at this point, we've set the stage for our character, Narvi, so we need to move on. Narvi lives in Khazad-dûm during this extraordinarily prosperous period of time, and he does some really important stuff during that time, too. Let's start that part of the story by backtracking to earlier when we were tracing the path of the Fellowship of the Ring, and where they go when they leave Rivendell. So they head south for a while, but eventually they try to cross the mountains to get to Mordor. They don't want to go too far south because Saruman is down there lurking and ring-hunting. Instead, they try and fail to go over the mountains. Remember the whole episode where they get snowed out on the mountain? Yeah. This leaves them with no option but to go under the bluffs, right through the old abandoned, or at least dwarfless, mines of Moria. The first step in this journey in the dark is to find the hidden doors located on the east side of the mountain range. These are the Doors of Durin, that's what they're called. They glow in the dark and are made of Ithildine, a metallic substance that won't glow until someone touches it and speaks the password. It's kind of like a Middle-earth version of two-factor authentication. And even then, it only mirrors starlight and moonlight, so it's very specific. Welcome to the secret, password-protected lives of the dwarves, my friends. Anyway, in this case, the code isn't too hard to crack, which just shows you how hard it is to get into these dwarven doors when they really want to hide them. This door is not hidden, and it literally says, quote, "The doors of Durin, Lord of Moria, say friend and enter," end quote. And of course, the secret password is just Melon, the Elvish word for friend. Gandalf speaks the password, the doors open, and then the group is attacked by a monster in the water, which destroys the doors. After it fails to capture the ring bearer, the fellowship is trapped inside the mines, and they're forced to find their way to the other side. Okay. This is the stuff we're all well aware of, I think. But I want to rewind things to that moment, because when they first discover the door and light up the Ithildien like a moonlit beacon, the big text on the door says, "The doors of Durin, Lord of Moria, say friend and enter," but that isn't all. Underneath, small and faint, is a little sign-off, like an artist marking their work with their signature. In this case, though, it's a pair of collaborators, not just one, and they're represented there with both of their names. The smaller text reads, quote, "I, Narvi, made them. Celebrimbor of Holland drew these signs," end quote. Okay, now we have a rough idea of who Celebrimbor is, but Narvi? Who on Earth, or in this case, I guess, who under Earth is this guy? As we'll find out in detail in the next few weeks, Celebrimbor is an incredibly gifted Noldorin elf. I'll fill you in on the Noldor in a bit. Just let it be said that he's one of the most famous smiths in all of Middle-earth history. So his name showing up on something like this makes sense. But Narvi, I mean, apart from the fact that he's a dwarf, which automatically implies a skill in stone and smithwork, what else do we know about this mysterious name? Other than the fact that it's so important, it's included in the inscription before Celebrimbor's name, I might add. Well, it turns out that Narvi is actually one of the most famous dwarven craftsmen of all time. In fact, in the Index for Unfinished Tales, he's summarized in 13 short but very insightful words. Quote, "Dwarf of Khazad-dûm, maker of the Westgate, close friend of Celebrimbor of Eregion," end quote. And that, friends, is all we get to know. No, for real, it's like the entire Narvi shtick rolled into one short sentence. I'm not saying he's never mentioned apart from that. He does show up one or two more times, which we'll get to, but these other mentions only reinforce these two or three critical elements that make up Narvi's mysterious character. The dwarf is from Khazad-dûm. We already know that. We know what Khazad-dûm is. It's great, it's huge, it's powerful. The fact that he's important within that shows that he's not someone to take lightly. On top of that, he makes the gate, the West Gate, that Celebrimbor marks with his Ithildien craftsmanship. And just to make it clear, the West Gate is the same thing as the Doors of Durin. Okay, and then the third thing is that he and Celebrimbor are close friends. That is something that is not made clear until you read that sentence. Now, in the actual Unfinished Tales text, so the part that the index definition I just read is pointing to, Narvi is briefly mentioned once, and it should come as no surprise that it is in connection with the elf that would become known as his bestie, Celebrimbor. In fact, this is the text where the whole bestie idea that I keep referencing comes from. Now, when Celebrimbor enters the story in Unfinished Tales, it's in a version of Galadriel and Celeborn's story. In fact, it's that one that I've mentioned before, which involves several different convoluted and amended versions of the two heroes. In this case, Celebrimbor himself is simply referred to as an expert craftsman. He isn't depicted as the lord of the elvish realm of Eregion yet, as is the case later on. But that's commentary that we'll save for Celebrimbor's own series. Suffice it to say, he's a good craftsman at any time when he's mentioned. But we're here for the overlooked Narvi. And I'll tell you what, this guy, or this dwarf, is really, and I mean really, overlooked. The only mention he gets is when it explains that Celebrimbor has an almost dwarvish obsession with crafting, and he enters, quote, "into a close relationship with the dwarves of Khazad-dûm, among whom his greatest friend was Narvi," end quote. That's it. That's his only mention in that book. So we have the definition at the end in the index, and that one mention of him in the text. Now, you see the greatest friend bit tucked away in there, though? We're only working with a few dozen words here, and yet, within that time, Tolkien manages to emphasize twice that Narvi and Celebrimbor are uniquely close friends. If this pair of talented and friendly artisans team up, and along with their crafty brethren, they work together on a lot of different projects. In fact, in Unfinished Tales, it also says, quote, both elves and dwarves had great profit from this association, so that Eregion became far stronger and Khazad-dûm far more beautiful than either would have done alone. Of course, most of these projects aren't named. In fact, all of them aren't named except one. There's only one that really makes the history books, and it's still kicking around 2 ages later when Gandalf and company come a-knockin'. That's right, the most famous of these collaborative projects are the Doors of Durin themselves. They represent the ultimate elvish-dwarvish achievement, with master craftsmen from both sides of the aisle teaming up to bring the project to life. And it's so cool to know that beyond those doors, this is just the beginning. This enters into an entire realm of projects that these guys worked on together. So it's not just that the one-time elves and dwarves came together, they built a cool door. That's just the symbol of how much they accomplished when they teamed up in the Second Age. But the one thing we do have that we can focus on here is the actual door itself. And that masterful entryway is where we'll pick up the Narvi story when we come back. Just a quick little bit of housekeeping at the end here. As always, any ratings and reviews for the show are greatly appreciated. I want to give a big thank you to all of the new people that have been following as well. And I wanted to remind everyone that you can follow the show on Twitter as well at the handle @PakJaron, PakJaron. Until next time, friends. This episode is brought to you by, well, me. And despite the fact that I've memorized whole chunks of Tolkien at this point, it still takes quite a bit of work to pull each of these together. There are also some recurring expenses that come with keeping the show on the air. So, if you're interested in helping, I set up a way to toss a few dollars toward covering costs. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/thehalfling. That's buymeacoffee.com/thehalfling. If you make a donation, thank you very much. And either way, I hope you'll stick around for all the fun. All right, that's it for now. Until next time, friends.